Coming to you by way of the not-for-profit Mainframe Studios at 900 Kia Way in downtown Des Moines, this is 900 Views, a podcast about building community through the arts as we build an arts community. I'm your host, Pat Bodie, and today I'm at Cafe Diem in Ankeny, along with poet Crystal Stone, who has met me more than halfway from her home in Ames. Now, along with Steve Rose, Crystal has coordinated a series of readings from several poets for Art Week at Zanzibar's Coffee Adventure in Des Moines. Crystal reads Friday, June 21st at 5:30 with two other poets, which is one of the reasons we're posting this podcast a little bit early to help make you aware of Crystal's upcoming reading. Crystal Stone is an MFA candidate in creative writing and the environment at Iowa State University and serves as poetry editor of Flyway, Iowa State's Journal of Environmental Writing. And in the interest of full disclosure, I was once in that particular MFA program at Iowa State, and my hat's off to those who continue in it. It's an excellent program. I had to bail because of work obligations. In April of last year, Crystal gave a TEDx talk on the transformational power of poetry, and her collection of 61 poems, Knock Off Monarch, was published by Don Valley Press. Now, I watched the TEDx talk, and I urge every one of you listening to go to Crystal's website, crystalbstone.com, and check that out. Crystal is quite powerful and begins with how poetry was transformational to you personally. Please tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So I started the TEDx talk talking about my experience with battling my mother in court as a child. So we had been battling her since the time I was probably five, I think. I don't really remember anymore the exact ages, but we've been battling her at least for 5 years, and the judge wasn't really listening to me. I was young. They would put me on the stand, but they didn't really believe it or understand kind of the significance of what was happening at home.
Your mother was an alcoholic and placed you and your brother in some risky situations.
Yeah, and we would call the police and they would document it, and she would read the documents and she would hear our testimony, but she didn't really understand the impact emotionally of my mom's alcoholism and the emotional abuse. So when I was in seventh grade, I wrote her a letter, and in that letter I included some poems about the experience and how it impacted my brother and I emotionally, and the judge completely changed her mind and suspended all visitation rights.
What is the power of poetry in making people-to-people and community connections?
Well, I think that all poetry has an impact. It's just different. And you know what? Each person will connect with different things. Some of my friends connect really well with narrative poetry, and many people connect well with narrative because as humans, I think we're drawn to story, right? Even when we're trying to heal from something, we need to create a narrative about what happened to us before we can create a narrative for the future that we can kind of embody, right? I think that poetry is good because it tends to be like short, and so it gives us room to read and reread and reread again, whereas like a novel is so long, the amount of time it would take for us to reread it multiple times and really like delve deep into it, we don't all have, right? And we do have that with a poem. So I think that it can really give us the breadth of one particular moment in time and one particular emotion because it's so small and rereadable. Whereas a novel encompasses like a ton of different emotions and a ton of different experiences, but can we really delve deep into those?
Would you like to read from your book, Knock Off Monarch? Your poem, Promise, does speak to the challenges and opportunities of poetry as a connector a bit.
Promise. My next poem will sound like someone else. It will be brave, change someone's mind about poverty. My next poem will be a recipe. I'll teach him how to cook daddy's squirrel pot pie, rub pork ribs the right way, mash potatoes like a man, and bacon wrap their vegetables tight. My next poem will be skinny from smoking, a backyard barbecue, some prayer candles, and maybe a firecracker or two. My next poem will be patriotic. There will be guns in it because how else will it defend itself? My next poem will destroy a fire wrongly and kill a child. My next poem will stand for brotherly love, Philadelphia, like it belongs there. It'll say hoagies and jimmies and freedom. It will reek of Yingling, stumble through South Street, steal Thanksgiving turkeys, and eat bass right out the Schuylkill. My next poem will be a homewrecker, the worst kind ever seen.
So many different parts of that poem, which begs the question of what inspires your work.
Well, growing up kind of poor in a redneck household, and I say that in quotation marks, but growing up with a dad who's cooking squirrel pot pie and doesn't eat vegetables and has a 2-year degree and my mom had none, you know, going to college at a liberal arts school, I felt like an imposter all the time.
Why?
Well, my professor always wanted me to sound like someone else. He would give me these famous female poets like Louise Gluck to kind of study and emulate, and I just never felt connected. And what I was trying to do to prove my worth as a poet was always write after poems in the style of these other poets. So eventually I just got mad and wrote this poem as my next poem's gonna sound like someone else because I can't talk about myself and I can't be myself in this environment. And so then I became wholly myself in this poem in kind of defense of my background and kind of, you know, dealing with my imposter syndrome as a poor girl in a fancy school, you know?
What drew you to a writing program connected to conservation and the environment?
So my undergraduate was at Allegheny College, and most of my friends were all environmental scientists. So I was just learning a lot about that. When I was younger, I participated in a Get Green Day, and we made art out of recycled materials. And so I was drawn to that kind of aspect of recycling. I think you also get drawn to it when you grow up and you don't have a lot of things, so you're trying to create what other people have through whatever you can find. So my filing cabinet was something I pulled out of the trash when I was in high school because somebody else left it behind, right? So you get really familiar with recycling when you don't have things and you see people throwing away perfectly good things that you can use and repurpose and make good in your house. So I thought it was cool that I had the chance to study poetry and also potentially do an environmental study, getting to know nature a little more. Nature has always also been something that made me feel more connected to myself, the world, and helped me reset when I was going through different traumas.
Would you please read one more poem?
This one is called God Is. God is not an octopus in the Mediterranean. He's like a jellyfish that outlives children who do not know yet to be reborn. What goes through its mind when cells converge in the water? With no family but what he created, God lifts his hand to drink water. The sun goes rogue in one of his towns. He stopped leaving his kingdom a few months back. Trapped in an ocean, he ran out of ink when he made me. Watched me wander down the street, 4 years old, with just a dog by my side. He causes others to, neighbors sick, dying, to pay bills, always working long hours. God grows tired of it all. What if he made less elements to react and explode? What if he never made life, just decorations, maybe video games? There would be no suffering, no need. The jellyfish attaches himself to a boat. He wants to explore the Atlantic. The waters are much colder. God takes a shower, wishes to start over, but he can't go anywhere. His reputation is unknown. The jellyfish doesn't recognize his kinds. They are taking over the waters. God sees his reflection. They are all thousands of years old. What a shame to live forever with the same face.
With statements like, God grows tired of it all, it's a provocative poem.
Well, I was thinking about what it would be like to be God, you know? And I was because, you know, sometimes you're living your life and you're why am I here? What is my purpose? You know, you contemplate suicide occasionally because you're why, right? So anyway, I was thinking, I was just I think what often motivates people to feel that way is the way other people talk about them, right? How other people perceive them and their reputation, right? I remember when the Monica Lewinsky scandal came out, that first internet scandal, I was so young, and I never forgot her name because of what people were saying. And I remember thinking oh my God, I would never want to be her, having everyone know your name and your face and this one thing you did that was negative. And then I thought about it and I was just well, if there is a God, he's still around causing trouble, and some people are using his name great, and some people are saying crappy things about him. So I was just kind of imagining God contemplating suicide and what it would be like to live forever and have not be able to change your reputation, not be able to start over, not be able to, you know? I don't know. It was a weird thought.
That takes us to another topic, the power of poetry to create empathy, and it sounds like you're trying to be empathetic to God.
Yeah, I was oh man, it must suck to be him a little bit, you know? Man, people probably talking so much crap on him, you know?
On this topic of empathy, I'd like to quote from a blog you wrote.
Yeah.
Again, on the transformational power of poetry. You wrote, "Poetry changes our worldview how we understand ourselves and the people around us. It builds the empathy and connection so crucial to a happy, fulfilled life. How does poetry do that?
Well, I just love so much about poetry. I love when I'm writing the imagination that I get to use. I love the imagination it inspires when I read other people. But I think, I don't know, poetry just makes me happy in general, like all sorts of kinds of poetry. I love being surprised, you know, because it's not a bad surprise in a poem, you know, whereas like sometimes in real life you get surprises, like my car broke down in Ohio. That was not a fun surprise. But in poetry, there's always interesting surprises that like make you just think about the world differently. And who doesn't like to be inspired and see their world differently? And I think a fulfilled life comes from having questions that you get to explore, like research, a journey, you know, but maybe that's just me.
I'd like to reference another quote. Time and time again, poetry shifted my gaze and restored my mental health. I take it you hope your work does that for others.
I definitely hope that happens for other people. I think that the reason, or if it does happen, it's because what I'm constantly doing is playing. And so I actually was just in a workshop with Jericho Brown at Westchester University's poetry conference. And he was telling us his process, which was really similar to mine. I just never articulated it quite so, you know, succinctly as he did. But what I do is I'm constantly gathering quotes. They could be something I overheard. It could be something that I thought, like an image that came to my mind as I'm exploring something or reading. So I just have this like ongoing list of notes, and then eventually I have like a long enough collection that I'm like, okay, I'm gonna put these things together and juxtapose these random images that I made, and I'm gonna create this universe in this poem, right? And so like the one that I've just written that I'm working on, that I haven't finished this poem yet because I keep avoiding the poem because I don't have the whole thing, but the lines that came to me was somebody was joking around and they were like, but first let's talk about death. And I was like, that's a good start to a poem. So I wrote that down, but first let's talk about death. And then the line that came to me later on when I was thinking about myself, I'm like, I'm chronically hobbied. This is so annoying. And then I was like, wait, what if, but first let's talk about death, chronically hobbied and abled. So now I'm going to talk about death in this very strange way, as if death is a hobby, or death has hobbies and he's a collector of things. And why does he choose what he does? You know, that's what I'm interested in exploring in this next poem. But it could go somewhere else. I don't know yet. I'm still collecting lines for that. And we'll see where it goes in the end. But I like to play, and I like to juxtapose things that seem unrelated, lines I've thought about myself. Like when I was writing all the poems, like Moses and his wife attend a roller derby game, I was actually sitting, what she's doing in the poem, she's sitting there and she's like melting pencils in her like tea can, and like she's eating blueberries on the floor, drinking brandy hot chocolate. That was literally what I was doing when I was writing the poem. I was drinking a brandy hot chocolate, eating blueberries by my space heater, trying to like melt my pencil in the tea candle because I was so bored. Iowa winter is so much. So I was just like, but this character isn't me. This character is definitely Moses' wife, because he's always, you know, parting the seas and delivering commandments. Let's talk about her instead.
What is the role of the poet in the arts community? Is there a particular kind of artist-to-artist connection that poetry helps to facilitate or catalyze?
I think it's hard to like nail down like a singular role of the poet or a singular role of poetry in an arts community, because I think that poetry can do a lot of things, and I think that those interactions vary depending on the artist. So like maybe an example can help me.
Yes.
Okay, so for the Signal Poetry Festival, the first event that we're doing is this Postcards for Progress. So we'll have a visual artist design a blank postcard. We'll have nonpartisan political people come and talk about issues happening to Iowa, or in Iowa, not necessarily based on party lines, but based on the issue specifically. And then what we'll do is we'll write little poems to politicians to help explain how we feel, like what we think about these policies. Because, I mean, it worked for me in court. Writing a poem helped people understand the emotional truths related to the laws that were happening. So I figure, why can't that happen in politics? But that's obviously just one particular role it could have in the arts community. If someone makes a postcard, we make a poem, we send it out to a politician. But there's other different kinds of collaborations, right? Like I've done ekphrastic poetry, where there's a visual artist who creates something and I write an interpretation of that. And I even have that even in my book here. From Canelod's Bippity Bippity Boppity Boo or something. I can't pronounce the word. But it's like this like squirrel that committed suicide, so I wrote a poem interpreting it. And then there's other connections, like we just inspire each other generally. We bounce ideas off each other. So I have artist friends in all different places, and we're constantly bouncing off ideas for like how to market ourselves differently, because as a poet, I think in one direction and my visual artist friends think in another. So together we kind of teach each other how to use social media, how to market ourselves, because the poet maybe writes the copy for the post and the visual artist is coming up with the picture, you know? We're helping create the hashtags. They're coming up with the design. I don't know. So there's many different ways that poets and visual artists, I think, can collaborate, and what the poet can do for the poetry community or for the arts community generally really depends on like the community's needs, their skills as a poet, what kind of poetry are they writing, how relevant, you know what I mean?
That's fascinating. Now, on your website, you have a series of graphics with snatches of poetry.
Yeah.
Well, what's the origin story of those pieces?
Oh, yeah, they're my blackout poetry. So that's actually how I got my book deal. So I write blackout poetry as an exercise in imagination. So if I'm struggling to write something, you know, we think in the same words every day, right? Like we have the same conversations with the same group of people. We tend to read similar texts. So the way that I try to like spark new pathways and new ideas in my poems is by I'll take a piece of paper and I'll find interesting words and I'll create interesting protagonists. So champagne is the protagonist, and then I'll find a verb that's interesting and another noun. So I can create this new sentence that has me thinking in different ways. So now maybe a poem emerges with this language that I don't use champagne in my daily life. Maybe I won't use the verb on that page in my daily life. And then like I'll draw a picture, and it's like for me a low stakes one. Like this doesn't have to be published. This is for me to play with language and visual arts. And that helps usually inspire me when I'm in a rut with writing. So then I started posting it on Instagram on my stone flowering page. It's supposed to be a page with my little sister, actually. And so we started making those, and I connected with this other poet on an Instagram page called Fade Into a Blackout. So he was a blackout poet too, and he's much, much better than me at blackout poetry, because that's his niche. He's a graphic designer. He's like an amazing artist. I'm less of a visual artist and more of a poet. So I met Fade Into a Blackout, and his name's Michael, and I messaged him and I said, hey, I was going to start doing some blackout poetry workshops. Do you have any pointers? And he was like, so I was like, here's the outline I came up with. His is way more detailed and organized. And I was like, hey, thanks so much for the tips. And hey, congrats on your book. I'm actually shopping around my manuscript now. And he was like, well, why don't you try my publisher? And that's how I got my book deal, was first by like creating community through this blackout poetry, and then eventually connecting with a publisher who published my academic work.
You actually had someone say to you, and again, you wrote this in that blog, Crystal, you are so smart. Why not make a difference instead? Apparently, as in instead of writing poetry. What would you say to somebody today saying something like that about your profession?
Well, see, I've like learned to stop responding with words and more with like projects. So like I have so many ideas. I'm designing an app for poetry, but I don't want to release the details yet because I don't have the skills. So I'm still trying to find a developer before I publicize it and someone else makes it, because I can't. And I'm working on like a little like YouTube channel TV series with it's going to be called My Poetry Kitchen with Carolina Cabada. She's another student in the MFA program. And so it's going to be a poetry cooking show. So for me, I don't really answer with like, well, I don't want to tell people I'm making a difference. I just want to make the difference and then let them be the judge. And if they don't like it and they don't see it as a difference, well, then they weren't my audience anyway, you know? I think you can resist in many ways. And I know that I'm a writer and I'm like, words are so powerful. But in those cases, I just don't respond with words. Or maybe a poem. Maybe I would write a poem.
One last thing. What's ahead for you as you wrap up your degree and launch as a poet, possibly working outside of academics?
Well, that's a great question. I don't really know yet. You know, I'm looking at poetry and residence programs, writing and residence programs, looking at PhD programs, looking at marketing jobs. And I'm still writing poems, so we'll see. You know, I've been kind of letting opportunities happen and not letting them passively. I mean, I'm actively pursuing opportunities. But for once in my life, I'm not planning every detail, and I'm just going to let the world show me what there is.
Thanks so much to Crystal Stone, and a reminder that she will be one of three poets kicking off this week of poetry at Zanzibar's Coffee Adventure as part of Art Week, so you can catch her June 21st at 5:30 p.m. at Zanzibar's Coffee Adventure in Des Moines. Won't want to miss it. She mentioned, at my request, blackout poetry. I was not that familiar with the term, hence my question, and blackout poetry really refers to poems where someone took a marker and blacked out words and the ones left behind to create the poem. So if you get a chance, check out our website and look at that. We also, I think, will be hopefully posting one of those. And then an event that you cannot miss, if at all possible. And it's an official Art Week event now, as it should, because it does a wonderful job of combining arts and science, arts and conservation, which is something we need more of. The Iowa Water Festival. Shout outs to Christine Curry and Sarah Spain for all their exceptional work in putting this together. It's slated for Sunday, June 23rd at the Isaac Walton League. That address is 4343 George Flagg Parkway in Des Moines. The festival is going to feature water-related artwork, music, dance, information, fun. You'll be able to make origami boats, create Japanese fish paintings, taste beer, and test water. I think we should all do our level best to try and get out there for at least part of the event. It starts late in the morning, I believe, at 11 a.m. and goes until 8:30 p.m. So music, bands, all that great stuff. Thank you so much for listening to 900 Views.